Para-X Radio, your source for everything paranormal and beyond.
The views and opinions expressed by the host and its guests do not necessarily reflect those of Para-X Radio Network, its affiliates, its sponsors, or Paranormal Universal Press, LLC. Paranormal Encounters podcast series is educational, entertaining, and intriguing. Be careful what you wish for.
Careful what you wish for. Ever get that feeling that something might be hanging around?
Good day, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Paranormal Encounters podcast series. The producer and host of this series is Dr. Kelly Renee Schutz. She will be joining you shortly. Before we meet Dr. Schutz, let me give you some background about her. She is a published author and academic, former legal investigator, and paranormal enthusiast, who holds 4 advanced degrees in the area of higher education and applied communications, with a secondary interest in parapsychology and life-after-death issues. Dr. Schutz travels to haunted locations all over the United States and Europe, seeking out situations to investigate. A sensitive intuitive, Dr. Schutz has had numerous experiences with the paranormal since the age of 9, with her most frightening and recent experience being an oval-shaped floor-length mirror cycling around in front of her in a haunted room she had stayed in. She has photographed apparitions in a screened window, been kicked up into the air, been sat on, choked, put into a trance, attacked, and continuously sought out by the unknown who want to share a message with her. From her personal experiences and in interviewing others, she has written nearly 100 illustrated stories in her book series entitled Paranormal Encounters. The Paranormal Encounters podcast series will initiate with Dr. Schutz first discussing a variety of interesting topics, as well as her personal experiences that will evolve into other segments for your interest, enjoyment, and education. Each podcast episode will be approximately 45 minutes long. Dr. Schutz welcomes your questions and comments. How to contact her or ways to order her books will be mentioned at the end of this podcast.
Whether you're listening at home, at work, or anywhere, thanks for making Para-X part of your day. Your source for everything paranormal, Para-X.
Good evening, everyone, and thank you for listening to a special episode of Paranormal Encounters podcast series as published by Paranormal Universal Press, LLC. My name is Dr. Kelly Renee Schutz. I am the writer, the producer, and host of this show. Tonight, our special guest, Dr. Bob Davis, will be with us to share his thoughts and findings just released in his book entitled Life After Death, An Analysis of the Evidence. In his book, he addresses everything from near-death cases and studies, out-of-body accounts, experimental evidence, mediumship, apparitions, parapsychological explanations, reincarnation, and theories that tap into quantum physics, the multiverse, as well as the consciousness-brain connection. Whew! Wow! Geez, Bob. Sounds fascinating, though. Before we begin our interview with Dr. Bob, let me also bring forth an exciting announcement. For those of you who have enjoyed the Maynard and Mildred segments of my shows, this dynamic duo is making their worldwide debut around the first week of March by launching their first illustrated book along with audio CD, combining and compiling 22 of their best comedic segment shows. If you would like to pre-order, that is truly possible right now. How you would do that is you would go to www.paranormaluniversalpress.com, that's all one word, and scroll down, you'll see my other paranormal books, and then you'll come across the book audio CD, Maynard and Mildred. Why don't we just take a second here and listen to their upcoming promotion, shall we?
Rude.
I'm Maynard.
And I'm Mildred. And we are
the Maynard and Mildred Show.
She's a ghost.
No, I'm not. You just can't see me. I'm invisible.
She gets me in trouble all the time.
I could follow you, Maynard, to the end of the universe.
That's what I'm afraid of.
Enjoy the show!
Sounds like a winner to me. Well, 2 years in the making, this book audio CD is a comedy series suitable for young and adult audiences alike. Once the launch gets nearer to March, I will give a shout out to all of you on how you can purchase the book and audio CD on Amazon, Kindle, and Barnes & Noble. Now, back to our featured guest tonight. Dr. Bob Davis is an internationally recognized scientist of sensory neuroscience and served as a professor at the State University of New York for over 30 years. He has published over 60 articles in scholarly journals and lectured at national and international conferences. Since retiring a few years ago, he has written two books. His first book, The UFO Phenomenon, Should I Believe?, and his second one, which is Life After Death, An Analysis of the Evidence, should open up a dialogue to many of us with our questions about the paranormal. Both books can be found and ordered on Amazon.com. Bob, welcome to the show.
Pleasure to be on your show, Kelly, and thank you very much for the invitation.
Say, Dr. Bob, where might we be Skyping each other from this evening?
Well, I'm down here in the sunny state of Florida.
Ah, Florida. Boy, I'm jealous. How's the weather down there in your neck of the woods?
Well, right now it's a balmy 73 degrees, oh. A little bit of humidity.
I think most of us can be a little bit jealous of that. Maybe not the humidity part, though. I think most of us would agree that we're kind of waiting for some better weather to come around the corner here. Once we get into these months of February, March, I think we get a little bit tired of the winter and we're ready to bring it into the next stage. Well, your book entitled Life After Death, An Analysis of the Evidence, is certainly one that many of us will want to read. Many of us who especially are in the paranormal field, we like to investigate, we strive to find and seek answers to age-old questions. Is there life after death? Well, and most importantly, how do we know that this is true? Also, many of us in the field that are trying to run after the truth, at least, we are trying to figure out what we have actually been encountering. So we're hoping that you might provide us with some answers tonight, Bob, and why don't we start here maybe with the first question and get you moving in our direction here. So curious, so why did you write your book, Life After Death, the analysis or an analysis of the evidence?
Well, it's been an evolving process. I've always had a lifelong interest in the UFO phenomenon, which led me to write my first book, The UFO Phenomenon, Should I Believe? Especially after seeing two orange orbs in the night sky in Sedona, Arizona. That motivated me to write that book, which led me to appear on radio shows. And that, in turn, led me to become a member of the Dr. Edgar Mitchell Foundation for Research into Extraterrestrial and Extraordinary Experiences, known as FREE. And I became a member of the board of directors and research team. And in the process of doing research on over 3,000 individuals who claim to have interactions with UFOs, as well as non-human intelligent beings associated with or without the UFO, it became quite clear to me that consciousness was a critical component of that phenomenon as well. And when it became obvious that consciousness, whatever that may mean, is a critical psychological, shall we say, attribute, that led me into considering the possibility of whether or not consciousness continues after bodily death, which led me, not surprisingly, to write a book on the topic, whereby I attempted to connect the dots, looking at anecdotal evidence as well as experimental evidence that ranges vastly among various disciplines, like you mentioned, mediumship, reincarnation, near-death and out-of-body experiences, and tying it in, if at all possible, with theories in science and quantum physics, studies on consciousness, non-local intuitive perception. And it wasn't an easy task. It's very objective in nature. And I presented the evidence as best as I can in order to let the reader make up his or her own mind whether or not there is indeed an afterlife.
Interesting. Say, Bob, I want to go back to something that you had mentioned earlier on this, and I think a lot of us might be curious about this. Now, you mentioned that, and we hope we have some time at the end of this show to talk about your book, The UFO Encounters, but did you say that you actually saw two orange, I don't know what you call it. Yeah, orbs in the sky in Sedona?
That's correct.
Okay, so, all right. So can you kind of bring us in? We're curious, and then we'll hopefully talk about this a little bit more at the end of the show, too, because both of these topics are very, very fascinating, and I don't know which one I want to jump to first, but I still think we should stick with the life after death. So when you did see these orange orbs in the sky, where were you at the time? How far up in the air did you see them? Were they very bright? What did you notice about that?
It was one night in Sedona, which is well known for various types of paranormal experiences. Again, from a wide range of experiences that people claim to have when they're in this most beautiful city, as far as I'm concerned, in America. We were gazing towards the sky, believe it or not, in hoping that we would see something unusual. Well, in fact, after a period of time, I noticed a circular orange orb that was simply appeared. And it was at a distance, but nevertheless quite visible. It was hard to analyze the distance or its size, but as I was watching it, a second one either emerged from behind it or from it itself, and both of them then remained stationary for a period of time, which more than got my attention, quite fascinated, trying to make sense of it, wondering if it's a atmospheric plasma-like phenomenon that we were observing. But nevertheless, or not, could it represent a form of a UFO that's governed by a type of energy or intelligence that we simply can't explain? So while these thoughts were going through my mind, they suddenly winked out. And we were, of course, quite disappointed, but we were left with a very vivid, strong impression. And from that moment forward, given my background of interest in the phenomenon, I decided to write a book, especially since I had ample time, given that I was in the process of retiring. And that's the essence of it, essentially. I didn't receive any messages, as people claim, when they do observe these types of UFO experiences, but maybe my fierce determination, in a sense, was a type of message received that motivated me to write up on the topic.
One of the things that interests me about this, because I've had over 100 experiences with different types of paranormal phenomena, is can you recall how long you actually saw or watched these orange orbs hold their energy for as you were, I don't want to say studying them, but watching them?
Well, it was about 5 to 10 minutes, no more.
That's actually quite a long time for something to retain its energy. Usually, if we're talking about apparitions or anything like that, because I was curious to see what would happen with these, and that's 5 to 10 minutes is a long time to be able to hold its energy, unless it's, of course, something of a different type of phenomena. But that's interesting. Let's jump to that one. Maybe we'll pick this up again at the end, but I want to get back to the same connection, of course, is how paranormal was what you saw that. Let's go back to your book, Life After Death. Your book discusses several topics that are of interest to many of us who are fascinated by the paranormal. And you do write about such topics as ESP, near-death experiences, out-of-body apparitions, which I've got a little bit, probably more than a little bit, of some experience with, parapsychological explanations, and reincarnation. This stuff is really fascinating to the paranormal field. And as you look closer at each of these types of contact modalities, have you been able to determine if there's any unique similarities between them? What are your thoughts, Bob?
Well, under this umbrella of the various types of phenomenal, shall we call them, contact modalities, we can term it spiritual, mystical, extraordinary experiences. In fact, there's a new discipline called neurotheology that tries to attempt to focus and explain what this umbrella is all about, because it represents various types of non-ordinary, or shall we call it, altered states of consciousness. So it's a very common underlying theme to all of them, and as well as associated encounters with what we use the term as a supernatural world, which is part of the experience that people describe, that has been widely reported throughout history across all cultures. And these events are often characterized by perceptions of oneness or interconnectedness with the universe, also positive emotions. There are alterations of space and time. People report to have increased insight and wisdom about themselves, about life in general and the universe. And there's a sense of spirituality that seems to emerge when people do have these types of encounters, which is quite interesting, because they come to a realization that there is something uniquely distinct and different than their current understanding of what is considered a 3D reality. They come to a realization there's something more, something beyond. Why am I seeing a UFO? Why did I just see an apparition? Why is this individual reporting accurate information about me when this individual could not have known anything about me? Why am I seeing this unusual UFO-like phenomenon in the sky, or beings in my room, etc.? So there is a compelling sense, too, that all of these kinds of experience and more are indeed very real. But they do seem to trigger this fragmented self of identity or transcended experience that appears in many to be very life-changing, and generally in a positive way. And there is experimental evidence that has shown this to be the case under conditions, even under sensory isolation, or even people taking psychedelic drugs like dimethyltryptamine, the active ingredient in ayahuasca, give rise to this, as well as people who have, of course, NDEs and out-of-body experiences, contact experiences with UFOs and non-intelligent, non-human intelligence, I should say. But what is uniquely interesting is a common aspect of the positive changes that occur in individuals, which we'll talk maybe a little bit later in more detail about, but they have a reduced fear of death, a greater sense of purpose, and that is what's quite unique about the commonality of these spiritual, mystical, and extraordinary experiences.
Interesting. Why don't we isolate one of them here, and why don't we delve into the topic of why don't we try consciousness? So when we're thinking about consciousness, what role, if any, do you feel consciousness might play as a part of the paranormal and even maybe the extraordinary experience? So what kind of role do you think consciousness plays, Bob?
I think it plays a very fundamental role that ties all of these contact modalities together. They're all interrelated. As far as I'm concerned, and I'm not alone in that regard, but we don't even know what consciousness is. It's been a study in the fields of neuroscience, biology, psychology, philosophy, physics, etc. And we're talking about what? We're talking about the sense of an individual self or intention, abstract thought. We don't even know where in the brain consciousness is facilitated, or let alone intention, abstract thought. So we don't even have the right terms to use to describe this spirit or soul, shall we call it. So we use the term consciousness, aware of being aware. And it represents a possible new type of subtle energy that goes beyond the four fundamental forces of traditional science within the unified field theory that Einstein devised, the two nuclear forces, electromagnetism, and what's the other one? I forget. gravitational, that is. So we have this endless stream of papers that are written on consciousness, and yet we're talking about essentially what's called the survival hypothesis. And if there is indeed life after death, then that hypothesis is accepted, approved. And that's the notion that consciousness can function when the body is clinically dead. And if consciousness is not the body, which is the key component here when we talk about the afterlife, there has to be some form of subtle energy that is not interrelated directly with the body, and in other words, can persist once the body decays in the ground. And that's the only thing I can say with certainty to the 150,000 people who die every day on our planet. Their body will decay in the ground, will be maintained in ashes in some jar on some mantelpiece. But does consciousness or the survival hypothesis be proven to exist beyond that? And that's been the long debated theory, source of conversation by millions worldwide throughout the centuries. And whether or not, in more current times, is that subtle type of energy that might be part of consciousness persists. And we are seeing some evidence of that in terms of quantum processes within the brain, and in terms of biophotons, or a type of energy that is actually generated from these quantum processes that might exist in a torsion wave or form of energy. It remains to be seen whether or not, again, that persists. But if it does, that might account for things like ESP and the paranormal, because there has to be some type of energy that's invisible, or non-quantifiable, at least at present, with our current scientific principles, methodologies, and instrumentation, which is not capable of measuring this. But ESP, in my mind, is real. And thus, we have clear evidence that an aspect of consciousness is involved in mind-to-mind communication, mind-to-physical systems, cause-effect relationships. And this has been demonstrated in numerous times in experimental settings, let alone anecdotal reports by individuals who experience the paranormal.
Say, Bob, I'm going to throw something at you, and I don't know if you've ever heard of this before, but I think you might be interested in this, because when we're talking about the consciousness and the brain and survival, I'm gonna give you a real interesting story that actually happened. My father passed away the previous December, and in hospice, and what was witnessed by my brother was something that we still chat about to this day. And so what happened was at the point that my father passed away, and I wasn't in the hospice care center at this time, but this was reported to me, my dad supposedly, I guess, according to my brother, he was standing out in the waiting room, and he was standing by a doorway, and it just seems like there's a lot of connection with windows and doorways when people pass away. But he was standing there, and probably in the center of the room, not too far away from him, was this elderly gentleman who was very, very, it looked like he had dementia. He was slumped over, and it was very obvious that he didn't seem to have much strength to him. But it was at the exact moment that my father passed away that all of a sudden he was just kind of standing by this door, and he kind of noticed this man, and this man all of a sudden sat up and was waving at him. And as if he was trying to indicate something to him, like, hi, I'm in this man's body. It was very, very strange. And then just moments, not very long after, the guy went back down into a slumping motion and proceeded to, not sit up anymore. And so I had recently interviewed a gentleman by the name of Jason Kish, who does a lot with consciousness, or has his theories on consciousness. And I brought this forth to him, and I asked him, do you think it's possible that the consciousness can actually go into another person's body and somehow manipulate their bodily form to indicate to others that they have more mobility than one would gather? And when you talk about the consciousness and the connection between that and the brain, I began to wonder if a live brain was needed, you know, something that was still functioning, in order to allow the conscious spirit or energy to somehow still perform. I don't know. Have you heard of any cases like this before, where consciousness can go into somebody else's body and manipulate their form? Any thoughts on that, Bob?
Well, there's no firm proof of that, although there's ample anecdotal evidence that occurs, and I think the term may be attachments or even possession of entities that do influence behavior of an individual. Obviously, yet to be proven, but people who are in the process of this life-to-death transition much more often than not claim, at least as far as many studies go, with hospice workers and physicians of the critical care physicians, they claim, for instance, that it is highly unusual for these individuals to not report interacting with deceased relatives or experiencing religious figures, seeing angels with wings, respond like, I'll be right there, with their arms stretched out, noting that they're communicating with the types of beings that they seem to be in connection with. So the point is this an aspect of consciousness that allows them to perceive another world? Are these individuals actually seeing a different world, or are they seeing a world differently? And you can only speculate what is indeed going on, and it does relate to some extent to your example here. But these kinds of events occur much more frequently than not, and it's not accepted as evidence, as far as the scientific community is concerned, that consciousness is indeed separate from the body. And that's the ultimate question here. What are we talking about? But we see manifestations of it. In your example, as well as in experimental evidence, the act of observation does affect, for instance, subatomic particles in laboratory settings. ESP, like I mentioned earlier, has been indeed proven in studies by Julie Bichelle at Winbridge Institute on the double-blinded conditions. So the point is, what are we talking about here? Are we talking about other entities that interact with human beings in varying ways? Are we talking about people perceiving an alternate realm of existence where they believe they're now a multidimensional being? They're actually a spiritual being inhabited within a physical body. Question is, can other entities possibly also attach onto us? I've spoken to many people, for instance, who go into haunted houses and they come back home being much more aggressive. They're cursing, they're angry all the time, they're not feeling themselves, and until they're so-called cleansed somehow by a person who's capable or trained to do that, they are then returned back to their normal self. So what is going on here? We could only speculate, but it's important pieces of information that we see all over the place that need to be connected. And my book, The Life After Death Analysis of the Evidence, attempts to connect those dots from a scientific and anecdotal kind of evidential perspective. And my next book is going to go a step further, trying to better explain by connecting even more dots to better understand the aspect of numerous phenomena that appear to be interrelated.
I'm trying to think about when you're talking here. I had all kinds of experiences roll through my head that I've had. One of the when we were talking a little bit, or you're talking a little bit about attachment. I know that when I was in Las Vegas a couple years ago, I went on a and I'm known, by the way, to be someone who, if there's a ghost in the area or an apparition. Especially if that is what it is, I am like a magnet to these things, and I've probably why I have so many experiences. And a lot of times they want to reach out and try to share a message, get my attention, get a reaction. For my husband, I know that if anything attaches to me, and I especially bring it home. You know, I know that he's actually had a lot of teasing done to him, especially when I'm out of the state and he reports to me that some really odd things happen in our house. Now, our house isn't known as a haunted house, but we do live across from a property where back in the Civil War days, there was a massive murder on their farm, and it is possible that from time to time, when the conditions are right, these apparitions will come over and pay a visit to us. But one of the things that was that you brought up was I went on a haunted tour in Vegas, and it didn't happen to me until the next day, but it did. I felt very, very strange being on this tour, and it was the second time I was on it. I wanted to bring my husband on it. And whatever it was for the energies that we visited, a number of shacks where supposedly there were apparitions hanging out in these shacks, and it was by Pioneer Saloon, for those of you who are interested or familiar with the Pioneer Saloon. And this is out of Las Vegas, about 30 to 40 miles. I had an experience actually in the shower where the next day, here I thought I was able to ward off all of this energy that was obvious, and I've got that all printed up in my book and illustrations shown of all the activity we went through that evening. But apparently I went into a trance, and I was standing in the shower for an awfully long time, and my husband came in to check on me, and I mean, for me, I didn't notice anything different. I just thought I was taking a shower, but apparently there was one point where I just stood there immobilized, and when he entered the room to check on me, because he thought something was really strange, What I felt was from my toes all the way up through my head, I actually felt this very ice-cold sensation that it felt like something was actually departing my body. And I couldn't explain or tell you exactly what that was. I just know that I was in the shower, immobilized, discovered, and at the point that of the discovery, something decided to leave my body, which I thought was kind of interesting. Bringing that further, though, I want to do ask you about some of your thoughts on scientific theory supporting the concept of life after death, or even we could even back up for a moment and see if you can explain to us what kind of experimental findings might support the consciousness independent of the brain. Now, you might have already touched on this a little bit, but because I've gotten off topic just a little bit, if you would bring us back to that and then move into existing scientific theories that support life after death. What are your thoughts?
Well, there to support life after death, again, we have to first establish the fact that consciousness, again, is independent from the brain. And this aspect of energy that has yet again to be discovered may possibly again be generated by the brain. And we see evidence of this in studies that have been done on a global scale. One is the Princeton Engineering Anomalous Research Laboratory Global Consciousness Project, whereby, for instance, 100 or so random event generators were stationed worldwide that continue to emit zeros and ones in random fashion. Thus, over time, you're going to get 50% zeros, 50% ones. However, when major worldwide events occur, which are result in the collective attention of millions of individuals worldwide to that event, these non-random generators became significantly non-random. They either generated more zeros or more ones, and we see this occurring on the catastrophic events of 9/11, tsunami devastation that occurred in Southeast Asia, Al-Qaeda attacks, among many other worldwide events that appear to statistically deviate these random event generators to become non-random, that is time-locked to these occurrences. Well, many researchers contend that this proves that our planet, for instance, is enmeshed within a cosmic field of consciousness. Nobel Prize recipients like Wigner and Schrodinger contend this, and their theories have been supported to some extent by these kinds of experiments, which not only appear on the collective worldwide scale, like the Global Consciousness Project, but also in laboratory settings where observation of subatomic particles have been found to cause these particles to behave either as a wave or as a particle based on observation alone. So the point is, there is something, and that is occurring in the act of observation or one's intention, that is altering a physical system at the subatomic scale and on a much larger physical scale. We see evidence of individuals being linked to EEG activity or EKG activity, even though, for instance, they may be separated by vast distances. The intention of one that is provided on to the other, as if they're trying to communicate with each other, shows a consistent time lock change within their EEG patterns or EKG patterns, indicating again that one's intention can alter biologic systems, shall we say. We see numerous other types of experiments. We don't have time to obviously go into great detail about it, but in my mind, there is experimental findings that support that consciousness may indeed be independent of the brain.
Interesting. Let's shift this for a second to, why don't we talk a little bit about near-death experience. I know that there's many people out there who have either had an experience, claim they have had an experience, or have talked with someone who have claimed they had an experience. And most of us know and we hear this all the time, and we're very conditioned to hearing if we die, we might go through a bright light tunnel. Some say they see white lights. Follow the white light. I know that in the paranormal field, especially for those of us who want to attempt to help apparitions, our thing is to always go to the light, you know, and always say go to the light. Some people report seeing deceased relatives and or friends. I know my father was talking about certain individuals on his deathbed. And of course, you just sit there and just kind of listen to what they're saying. Some people don't see anything at all. And I have had a conversation with the man who actually died two or three times. He had cancer, but he kept being revived and was able to keep in motion. But I had asked him once, I said, so each and every time that you've passed away and died, what did you see? And he said, I saw absolutely nothing. And I know that there's a woman that my husband works with. She actually died at her desk. And she had heart failure. It just happened suddenly and down she went as she was talking to someone on the phone. And so, of course, she was asked the question, when you died, because she was clinically dead for, I don't know, not very long, but long enough to be clinically dead. And she said she saw nothing. So, you know, it's quite a mystery to people about near-death experience. So what is your perspective about this? Do you feel experimental evidence can support the concept of life after death? And why do you think some people have experiences and others do not?
It is indeed a mystery, and probably the near-death experience represents the most critical piece of evidence to support the possibility of an afterlife. And it's a daunting, if not impossible, task to determine why we see those inconsistencies. Some people say they see nothing, while others, however, say something completely different, as if one's consciousness is indeed leaving the body. Is it a deceptive process that's facilitated by neurological changes associated with this compromised dying brain? Or are they indeed leaving their body and altering another realm of existence, which millions of people contend to have, which they consider to be real, which they consider to be a form of life after death, whereby they experience a profound unconditional love beyond description? One woman said it's like looking in your newborn baby's eyes for the first time, magnified 10 million times, for instance. And there have been research done that is quite interesting to support various aspects of this phenomena that are, again, highly suggestive of an afterlife. Dr. Jeffrey Long comes to mind. He said that his research with over 1,200 NDEs provides evidence of life after death. And he wrote an interesting book, Evidence of the Afterlife, where he talks about those types of experiences that people have, which one's, for instance, level of alertness usually becomes greater than that which they experience during everyday life. It's generally very realistic, and it's verified later by other NDEs as being real. People have shared death experiences where one is going through the dying process and another individual who's emotionally close to that person feels a sense that that person is dying. And lo and behold, their stories are the same. And again, time locked to the event. NDEs generally occur during general anesthesia, when conscious experiences should be impossible, but yet, yeah, people talk about seeing that bright light. They go through that life review in NDEs, which include real events in one life. Even if the events were forgotten, they seem to recall it during their NDE. And they encounter beings, usually deceased relatives, and even very young children report NDEs that are similar to what adults express. But there are, again, life-changing after effects following an NDE, which I know you and your audience is more than likely very familiar with. They're very significant, they're enduring, and they're consistent among individuals. I think it was something on the order of 80% of over 500 NDEs describe their thinking as being more clear during the NDE than before, when they were alive, so to speak. Even individuals who were blind from birth claim to see during their NDE, that's quite interesting, and it's hard to dismiss. And it's very common for individuals to see deceased relatives. One study showed that 95% of about 100 NDEers claim to interact with deceased relatives. We can go on and on about various studies that certainly indicate the aspects of what we call vertical perception, the ability to perceive events remote from the body, that are accurate and inexplainable by the fact that the person is nearly dead, not dead, but nearly dead, and they're so compromised in terms of their aspect of consciousness that there was no way that they could recall, or I should say determine, detect conversations that were in another room or elsewhere during that period of crisis. And it presents certainly an enigma in terms of trying to make sense out of such reports from studies by different individuals, independently corroborated, to explain. So we all know the stories out there. We all know that this is real in the minds of those that have it. And the majority of those who have NDEs report consistent things. But some people report nothing, like you mentioned. And maybe it's the level of near-death that determines whether or not they're going to perceive an alternate realm. We can only speculate if that is an important variable. The level of consciousness, maybe when one's consciousness is removed from the body, then they see this alternate realm of existence where there's no space, no time, and interconnectedness with others, and the corresponding transformational aspects in psycho-spiritual outcomes resulting from their NDE or OBE. We're talking about out-of-body experience that is really occurring during an NDE. They're interrelated, of course. But it's perplexing to try to make sense of it. And while it is acknowledged to occur by the scientific and medical community, there are varying theories as to what is actually occurring. One is, the evidence of an afterlife, while there are certainly other theories that are more neurophysiologically based, psychologically based. So it's a very intriguing area of study to determine whether or not there is, in fact, an afterlife.
Interesting. You mentioned transformation as you were noting about this. I was wondering if you could expand just a little bit on, for those who may have had a near-death experience, many report or many actually start to show or demonstrate a type of life transformation. Now, some may not, but for those of you that do, what's your take on people who seem to have spiritual or some type of positive life-changing transformation once they've gone through this? Any thought on why that may be occurring?
I think that's one of the most critical questions in this arena. Why the positive transformative changes that people report, not only when they have NDEs, and we're not talking about in all cases here, but a majority. But we also see this, as we mentioned earlier, in other types of contact modalities, people interacting with non-human intelligences during UFO sightings, among others that we mentioned. The curious question, obviously, is why positive outcomes? And it's not always positive. There's a small percentage that do have negative experiences. But the vast majority contend it to be positive, and we can only speculate. Maybe it's because these individuals' spiritual eyes open up and they come to the realization that there is indeed another reality of which they are a part, but not while they're in their body in this 3D reality, so to speak, but once there is a trigger, let it be an NDE or other types of contact modalities that trigger this event, people become more spiritual, more loving and caring, more sympathetic with others, more humane, generally speaking. and no fear of death. That's probably the most fundamental common personal attribute that occurs after these types of spiritual, mystical, extraordinary experiences. One, for instance, is the overview effect that astronauts have when viewing the Earth from space or the moon. Dr. Edgar Mitchell called it an epiphany when he was on Apollo 14, which he was the sixth person to walk on the moon, and he was so he was so much in a high state of resonance, let's call it that, or in transpiring feeling that he had an interconnectedness with the universe, as he described it, an epiphany. Many astronauts, for instance, have this kind of overview effect and a resulting positive transformation afterwards. They're moved. They experience something that is so profound in nature, that let it be viewing the Earth from beyond or other types of phenomena, that wakes them up at some level, makes them come to the realization again that there's more than just this. And whether or not it's a valid, realistic conclusion that these people now possess, which they didn't before, remains speculative, of course. But they all say very similar things. During this period of NDEs, among others, they all say that they feel this interconnectedness with the universe, a profound love and joy, as we mentioned. They see everything in a holographic view. And this holographic kind of explanation that many of these individuals express corresponds to theories in quantum physics, which we don't, of course, have time to go into, but it's consistent with the anecdotal or subjective experience where they explain that time no longer exists. Now and eternity exists simultaneously. You know, that 1,000 years, they say, may be instantaneous. We can't understand that. It's a mental concept that they feel is real. So here again, why are they transformed? Well, maybe they're transformed because they have now this new understanding. They see a different world. They feel as if they left their body. They understand, in their minds at least, what life is all about. And it's facilitated in many different ways, but the unique aspect of it is that even though there's differences among how it's facilitated, the outcomes are oftentimes very, very similar.
Interesting. Bob, why don't we, I thought that's really, it's really interesting. I'm just thinking, as you're talking, I was just thinking about this man that I, you know, asked about what he saw, and there was something different about him after, I mean, he came back to work, and so, you know, of course, I was observing him and fearful of him, you know, dying in front of me because he was prone and susceptible to this, but he insisted on coming back to work to continue to do what he felt like he liked to do. But I did notice there was some kind of peace or happiness that he seemed to exude from himself, and I thought, well, that is kind of interesting. So I just kind of watched him for a while. Of course, you know, eventually it all caught up with him, and he didn't survive, and he passed away. I think it was a couple months later, but it was just the idea that I did see some kind of a change in him that I also noticed as you're talking. Death communication is also something that we in the paranormal field, you know, run after to try to get answers about. And why do you think many of us who are immersed in exploring the paranormal field feel that we have maybe direct experiences with the disembodied? I know for myself, I have had experiences, intelligent, residual, you know, or otherwise, with the disembodied. But do you find that the research on death communication provides evidence to support there is life after death? What are your findings on death communication?
Well, there's considerable evidence on after death communication that, again, relate to individuals who are in that transitioning from life to death, report interacting with deceased relatives, religious figures, and it's expected on the part of nurses who take care of these individuals. The question, of course, is whether or not, obviously, if it's a hallucinatory event or not. But there have been many shared after-death communications by thousands of individuals that support the fact that the terminally ill undergo unique experiences that defy explanation. One study showed that about 90% of 1,000 individuals report seeing angels with different colored wings in their room as death approached. And it's not unusual for researchers to report that they hear the dying individual say things like, "Yes, dear, I'm coming," or "Just give me a few seconds, I'll be right there," and then they die immediately afterwards. So it's the deathbed visions, after death communication, which occur in numerous different ways. Collectively, it's reasonable for one to conclude that the appearance of the deceased at death approaches either reflects what wishful thinking, as many would consider, or it's a defensive hallucinatory brain response that helps one sense comfort during the dying process, or there is actual interaction with an aspect of consciousness from the departed, and the possibility that the deceased are actually attempting to communicate with us doesn't necessarily provide comfort to that individual as well as the family. So whether or not it's true, it's a positive aspect that does occur during this entirely emotional event that we can only imagine what it must be like knowing that you're going to die. And as long as it provides that sense of comfort and support during this critical time in life, then that's what's most important, obviously. The question, obviously, of course, is whether or not such experiences, which are common, are due to certain illnesses or drugs or brain-related events. And the question is, what is indeed going on? But there is sufficient evidence. I encourage your listeners to read more about after-death communication. Deathbed visions would come in many different forms, but again, it represents another unique aspect of the evidence to help support the possibility of an afterlife.
Interesting. You know, I do, as I'm listening to you talk, I'm like going, One of the things that also strikes me, though, is, and we can only touch on this very, very quickly, and I want to throw it at you, and then I want to just ask a brief question about your UFO phenomenon book, reincarnation. You know, I have had so many people ask me about reincarnation. Does it exist? Does it really happen? Blah, blah, blah. And, you know, the thing is, I don't have the answers for that, but there is something about reincarnation and perhaps maybe even the consciousness that does bring about this question. And I don't know if you've ever thought about this before, but I'm just going to throw it at you and ambush you with it. So many people who do believe in reincarnation feel that, you know, like when somebody dies, someone that they love, they think, oh, they'll probably reincarnate. Well, if the consciousness or someone or the disembodied or whomever decides to reincarnate, then is the essence of their consciousness or whatever it might be, is that like, is it gone? Because, like, I'm going to use my dad as an example. So my dad passed away. My siblings would ask me, where is he? I say, I don't know where he is, but energy doesn't die, so he's somewhere. For all I know, he'll make some. And I had a visit by my dad, by the way, a couple months later, and I and so did my brother, and we had the exact same experience. And we just kind of knew and felt, and we just knew it was him. But the thing is if my dad decided to reincarnate, Does that mean that if I wanted to call up my dad or ask my dad to show himself or maybe, you know, come in for a visit, does that mean that his essence to do so, it makes it impossible to do so because he has now decided to reincarnate into, let's say, a body of an animal or a butterfly or make himself into a tree? I don't know. What are your thoughts about reincarnation and the consciousness?
No, it's a good question. I wish I had an answer. That's irrefutable in nature, but I certainly don't. Probably the main source of evidence on reincarnation was that provided by psychiatrist Ian Stevenson from the University of Virginia in studying young children before the age of 8 who pretend to have had accurate recall of past lives. And Ian Stevenson match the details of these children's experiences and firmly believe that the children could not have known such details of previous lives that they contend to have had. And parents of these children claim that there was no way that they could have known this. Based on all that evidence, Stevenson concluded that the evidence strongly suggests, not firmly, that there is an afterlife, but maybe what is even more important than all of this was the fact that he noted birthmarks and physical aberrations in these children that corresponded to the way that the referenced deceased individual had died. You know, and he gives examples in his articles and books whereby if the child says, for instance, that they died by a wound from a sword in the area of the stomach that entered the stomach and came out the back, Stevenson related the location of birthmarks or aberrations physically in the children that corresponded to the entrance and the exit wound. There was the birthmark where the child said the knife went in the front and came out in the back. And this was a aspect of evidence that he said was most compelling of all. So research is still going on at the University of Virginia in this regard, looking at accounts that children in particular have, and that's another issue. Why primarily children before the age of 8 have these kinds of experiences, not exclusive to them, but primarily. And then beyond that age, people don't seem to have accurate recall or recall at all of their past lives, unless maybe they go through hypnotic regression, which is another subject of a curious, controversial issue in and of itself. But to determine whether or not deceased consciousness can interact with us at present, or if they do inhabit another body, then they understandably would not be able to do so. We don't know. We have to first obviously determine whether or not consciousness indeed exists beyond the body and persists after body. As you said, energy cannot be created nor destroyed, only converted. That's a fundamental law of thermodynamics. Well, does that also apply to our sense of me, I, oneself? And then we can move forward and speculate further about the issue that you just raised, which is a very important one for consideration.
Yeah, I'm always going to wonder in the back of my mind where my dad went. I know he's somewhere or in something, but I just think that, I do find it very fascinating about why some decide to reincarnate and some do not. I know I'm going to have you back to have a discussion on this UFO phenomenon book, Should I Believe? Because we're running out of time, and I hate cutting us short, but I think we now need to kind of wrap it up, and I want you to tell and remind everyone about both names of your books, and then where can everyone find them. So what are your two books, Bob?
My two books are The UFO Phenomenon, Should I Believe? And my more recent one is Life After Death, An Analysis of the Evidence. They can get more information about each book and myself on my website, bobdavisspeaks.com. That's bobdavisspeaks.com. And I hope you find my book to be objective in nature, to allow the reader to interpret what is actually going on here. And what is going on, I think, is the most fundamental issue of our time. And I think if we do eventually have the answer to these types of phenomena we are discussing, aspect of reality, and maybe even life itself, would be better understood and explained. But I want to thank you, Dr. Schutz, for doing what you do and helping to inform your listeners, who are very curious-minded, and I applaud them for being so, to help to better understand what is going on in our reality and possibly alternate realities.
Well, very interesting stuff, Bob, really. And I'm going to have you back to spend an hour with you on that UFO phenomenon book of yours, because I think that both of these topics combined are very, very fascinating stuff. And I thank you so much for not only just being on the show this evening, but for myself and others. These topics are very much of interest and a big thing going on right now. A lot of people are interested, and of course we're always interested to attempt to uncover the mysteries, of course, of the paranormal. So
thank you for joining us this evening. Dr. Schutz welcomes your emails and paranormal stories. Visit her website at www.paranormaluniversalpress.com for contact information, or go to amazon.com to view her books, searching under Paranormal Encounters. Thanks for listening. Take care. And until next time,
be careful what you wish for.
The script, vocal talent, and music compositions in this podcast program are copyrighted. As a disclaimer, this podcast episode or parts thereof may not be reproduced, reposted, or transmitted in any form without the express permission from the producer and company, Paranormal Universal Press, LLC, or Para-X Radio Network. Any opinion or claim made in any podcast episode by the host or guest does not necessarily represent the viewpoints of Paranormal Universal Press, LLC, Para-X Radio Network, or its sponsors. Properties mentioned in any podcast are publicly known to be haunted or have been discovered to have unexplained occurrences. If you are a ghost seeker, please take precautions and respect people's properties by not trespassing.